Hey, y'all. This is Grant. What you're about to hear is an interview with Coach Whaley, who's the head coach of the Lions Bridge FC. It's a fantastic interview conducted by Ron and Patrick, and it's kind of insightful. I'm now looking forward to what the USL can offer to the rest of the United States and just also player development. So if you're a young listener, listen to what Coach is saying.
Welcome to Cannon Crew, a weekly podcast discussing the Charleston Battery. Your host, Granite, will be joined by other defenders of the fleet from the black and yellow supporters section, and together they will help fortify and conquer. They are the Cannon Crew.
Welcome to the Cannon Crew podcast, everyone. This is Patrick. I am joined by Ryan. Ryan, what's up?
What's going on?
Not much. It's a little bit of a special podcast here. We have a guest with us this time, which is a Cannon Crew first. So I'm going to kick it over to Ryan. He's got a little history here and let him introduce him.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. So today we have on the podcast Chris Whaley. From his young days as a Nottingham Forest supporter and as a young footballer in England to his move across the pond to the United States, where he was a college player turned college coach, and is also coaching USL Division II side Lionsbridge. Whaley has over 20 years of coaching experience, including stops at Lees McRae, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Appalachian State, and Chowan. Last year at Lionsbridge, he led the team to the USL Division II final, national final. Personally, Chris was a coach of mine at Chowan, where he developed me into the man I am today. Now he is the Lees McRae Hall of Famer and Lionsbridge head coach, Chris Whaley.
What an introduction, Ryan. Thank you for that.
As well, I feel like a pioneer. I'll be honest, I think I came to America 22 years ago and the internet wasn't great back then. They didn't have cell phones with pictures and stuff like that. And podcasts and things like that were just a distant memory and a distant future belief. So this is awesome. All the things you're doing are great. So yeah, I've done a bit of research on what you guys are doing. I think it's awesome. So that's cool.
Great to hear. So let's get to, I have a question for you right out the gate, and I wanted to talk about your time at Lees McRae. And so I just wanted to know, how did you enjoy your time at Lees McRae, and what was the biggest challenge that you had to face when turning the team into as successful as it was?
Yeah, look, I'll give you a bit of backstory on how I got there, and that'll probably help answer your question, and it's a great question. So I was playing in the pro league back in the day. It was the Reading Rage. Charleston had a team in that league at one point. It was a USISL or something like that. It was the equivalent of the USL League One or Championship right now. And the team folded overnight, said, okay, we're not going to be a pro team anymore. Yeah, I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do? Because I don't want to go back to England. So I applied for a job at Lees McRae. I got the assistant job. I think I was 23 years old. And within 18 months, I was the head coach. So I think I was 25 years old. I think I was one of the youngest head coaches in the country. And I took over a program that at that time, the school was struggling a little bit. There was talk was going Division III. And that's why my boss and mentor at the time, Adrian Blewett, had moved on. And anyway, long story short, we didn't move Division III, but I inherited a team with about 10 players, which is a bit of a challenge. And then obviously then from there, my first year, I recruited about 20 guys. We had a team of about 30, and of those 10 guys coming back, only a couple really played a lot, but it was a pretty fast turnaround. We signed some really good players, and within 3 years, we were number one in the country, and within five, we've been to a national final. I made a ton of mistakes that you do when you're 25 years old. You know, I'm sure you've heard, Ryan, I don't know how old you are. How old are you, Ryan?
Just turned 25.
You know what I'm talking about. So, but it was crazy. I had guys on the team that were older than me, which was pretty nuts and challenging, but he was in a unique environment, special place. Spent 7 years of my life there before I went to Wisconsin, then came back and basically stayed in the same area when I was at Appalachian. And I've had property up there for a long period of time, and some of my best friends in the world are there. So it's a special place and a beautiful place. And obviously I've had some fantastic memories there. So
diving a little bit deeper into what you just had mentioned a few times, with bringing the players in, and you had mentioned you only had 10 players when you inherited the team. So how were you able to draw these players into Lees McRae and create that championship pedigree team within that short time span?
It was, I'll be honest, we replicated what we did at Lees McRae at Shawan, which is obviously down the road sometime. But what it was, I looked at it and it was, yeah, there you go, up hooks. Banner Elk's a unique place. It's so cold in the winter, so beautiful. I went and recruited a heck of a lot of student athletes from Florida, because those boys were looking to get out of the heat, because obviously it's so hot in Florida. And it's probably the first place where it actually gets, you know, seasonal temperature, if that makes sense. And it's a beautiful place as well. So we recruited those sorts of guys, and we recruited junior college guys, and we went international. And I fell back on my roots. And, you know, every year I've been a college coach, I've had a ton of international guys. And a lot of that is just because I can trust people who recommend them, because guys who I maybe played with in the UK growing up were then youth team coaches or professional coaches in the UK. And I got recommended some good players. And look, we turned it around really, really fast. Within 3 years, I think my first year, I know my record was 8-7-3, 8-7-2. Then we went 21-2-1. And yeah, I think I'm a half decent coach, but when it's all said and done, it's all about the players. And I honestly think that's what college soccer is about. I think soccer is about it worldwide, all around. I mean, I love the quote that Mourinho made, and you guys all remember the one where he used to say about his best ever job he did was at Man United when they came second in the league. Do you remember that one? And everyone's like, this guy's an idiot. Talk about
it. Yeah.
Now you look back and you think he was probably right, because that group was terrible. So it's one of those where I honestly think of having, we just somehow, we recruited and sold good players on what we were trying to do. And I sold them on a dream that, you know, come over to this country and be successful and that's for the internationals and see where it can take your life. And so many of those guys have now stayed in the States and made lives. And, you know, I played golf last week with a guy who was my first ever captain, and he's now running a homicide division in Orlando. And he's doing really, really well. He's super successful, and played golf with him a couple of times in Florida last week when I was down there 2 weeks ago. And yeah, he's my first ever captain. So it's really, really cool when you get to go back, 15 years on, and I'm still friends with those guys. So I'll beat him at golf. Let me just throw that one out there as well. I know you got to pick golf for a ride, obviously. So, but no, that's what all about the memories. Yeah. And then, yeah, obviously we reminisced a lot while I was down there.
Coach, I'd like to ask, just referencing that, did it help being a young guy yourself, international, like helping sell these guys on committing because they see it in you and it's kind of worked for you so far?
Yeah, I think that when we talk about Shawan later, I'll talk again about it. But yeah, I think I sold myself. I think I said, you know, selling these guys, look, I've been through this process. I was fortunate in the UK. I played at a pretty good level, but I never made it as a top pro in the UK. But I was with Forest and I played reserve team football for Brentford, and I played non-league football in the UK. I really wanted to get back into the everyday, you know, soccer. And that's why coming to the States was brilliant for me. I really loved it. And I improved dramatically in the 2 years that I did it. Then got a pro contract. And so I was selling that to these guys, you know, not just to the international guys, but the domestic guys as well. Come and have a great experience. And then let's use our, you know, our network and our tools to get you to the next level. And I'm a big guy. I never promise people I can get them pro contracts. I'd be naive, but I think through my contacts, I can promise guys that we'll get them trials and get them, you know, get them a couple of weeks somewhere. You know, Toby, who played with Ryan, was all set up to come down and have a 2 week trial at Charleston a few years ago. And then the Riverhounds snapped him up before we even got him there. But that's kind of, that's how we kind of do it. And you know, for me, that's great. And yeah, you're totally right. I think it's probably easier because they can connect to you and relate to you. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah. It's kind of hard to trust or at least believe someone who's older and is trying to tell you what they went through, as opposed to, say, someone who just got out of that situation and can immediately relate to a player who's going through kind of similar struggles or like just the choice of where to play.
Yeah. And the struggle of decision, right? So fortunately in my career, when I've become a head coach, you know, some of my best assistants have been former players of mine that have gone on and played at the next level and then come back into the coach. Did you play for Statsy? And then two of my current assistants, Lee Williams, who was, you know, a top player. I'm thinking the guys have all played at a good level. But they then, for me, now I am that older guy. They're now that conduit between myself and those guys. It's a great point you make. Yeah, I think for young athletes, it's probably difficult to look at an old fat lad like me and say, oh, was he good back in the day?
I was just going to mention, you talked about playing at kind of these levels at Nottingham and was it Brentford or Bournemouth was the other team?
I got let go by Forest at 16 and I played reserve team football a little while for Brentford. I never signed a contract there. And then I played non-league football in the UK, which for a team called, Harrogate, obviously, and Selby, you know, Harrogate's now in the Football League, but played that sort of level. Kind of almost paid my way through college in the UK, that was kind of how it was. And then came to the States. I was recruited by Penn State and Barry Gorman was our coach at the time. But because I'd been paid or played reserve team games in the UK, I wasn't able to go to a Division I school. But at the time, I went to Mercyhurst and we had a ton of really, really good players, a ton of ex-professionals, and it was good. It was a really good standard. I played two seasons there. One, my first year, we lost in the last 16 in the country. I think that was our only game we lost all season. And the year after, we lost in the final four. Somebody got sent off. I can't remember who that was, though, in the final four. He did score 3-16, though. So he must have been a decent player.
Yeah. I mean, too bad.
That's it. I was curious what made you go to Mercyhurst, but that definitely clears it up. So, were there any kind of standout things you took from UK play to the United States, more so in your coaching career, that you applied here, or something that is maybe a big glaring difference that some of the coaches kind of neglect over in our system?
No, I mean, it's a good question. I think, look, football has come so far in this country since I've been here. I remember it was, do you remember Fox Soccer? When he was on Fox Soccer games, and that'd be like one game on a Saturday morning, you'd be all excited and stuff about the one game. And so where we are now, like, I think the coverage in America is better than it is in the UK. They have the blackout games in the UK. So I think that says a bit of how far it's come. But I think my big thing I've always noticed is I thought I was quite fit and athletic when I was in England. And I was still both pretty fit when I came here. But you guys as a nation are bigger, stronger, faster, more powerful. So athleticism-wise, you guys, I think, have that angle on us. I think the maybe, and I'm not saying this to be disrespectful, the soccer IQ piece, I think the international guys get that because I don't think they have as many sports that they play growing up. I'll ask you two guys here after I speak, but what sports did you guys play growing up? I bet you played three or four. I might have played a few different sports, but it was always football. And I think that sometimes over the years, Pratt did hurt US soccer. Now I think you guys are getting there. And I think soccer's going to be the biggest sport in this country in time. I really do. And I've made statements where I think you guys have got as good a chance of winning a World Cup than England has in time. Because you've got such a massive pool of players and you've got such a great, let's say, database, like just such a great pool of athletes to pick from. But I think my big thing is it's just the soccer IQ stuff. But you guys are getting there. but it's going to take time. You know, football's been going on in England for, 200 years? How big's the MLS? How many years has the MLS been here? 25 maybe now?
Is it? Yeah, flips in over 20.
Yeah, well, I think Americans as a culture are probably quite impatient with stuff and want to win straight away, which is possibly why you guys are so successful though as well. You know, you don't just accept it. I think that's like, it's almost like one of your biggest strengths might be a weakness. Like, it's just going to take time. It's just going to take time. But you've got some good players as well. What did you guys play? Right, I know you played a ton of sports growing up. I know that.
I'm a little anomalous here. I was golf from a young age just because my uncle played, and it was fun to go out there and kind of learn that game. And then it was soccer for me from age 6 on, and that was it. It was club level. I have a unique perspective on it because I was almost just raised through the club ranks of pay to play on a club team, travel team. You still have to be good to travel and play, but kind of the bureaucracy that I know you as a coach are probably dealing with a little bit nowadays with players and parents just wondering why their kids play immediately. And that was kind of coaches leaving in and out of the system and not wanting to deal with parents berating them or being on their back a little more often than not, which more so an American, I guess, trait for when it comes to athletics kids, it seems like.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. It's a capitalist country, isn't it? So, you know, it's kind of one of those where in the UK, I remember playing. I played for a guy. His name was Dave Hicken. He was a lovely guy. And he coached me for probably from the age 10 to 15 or 16. I don't think he made £1 out of it. He didn't make any money off it at all. And he coached the team because he wanted to help kids out. And we had a good team. Guys went on to play professional football and had good soccer careers and all that. Didn't make a penny out of it. So, which is admirable, but then in the same respect, that's just the way it is in the UK, you know? That was where you could make, you know, I know if I got out of college soccer, I could make a lot more money being a director of a club. But I don't want to do that, and that's not the life I want to live. So it's nice to be able to do a podcast at 8 o'clock at night. So and spend time up. It's you'd be a club soccer coach, you're on the road and you're doing stuff every evening, and it has to often be, you know. And look, college soccer's hard, but I think club soccer's a really hard gig. So you guys have obviously both been involved in it. So
it's interesting because as a kid going through that, you almost like grow to fall out of love with the sport by having a 6-day, more so a chore. Like I remember having to build twice a week for 2 to 3 hours because that's just what everyone on the team was doing. So it wasn't required, but everyone was doing it. You were doing it. So I wonder if that kind of plays into it with our system here where kids just are kind of falling out of love with the sport a little bit by being so pushed into it at younger ages.
I don't know. Some of it is, I think there's just geographically, your country is so big. It's a continent. This country is a continent, isn't it? You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, you know, in the UK, I'll just use the UK because it's such an easy example. I could ride my bike to training and we had a really good team. You know what I mean? But there was possibly in Nottinghamshire, the county that I came from, there's probably 100 teams in Nottinghamshire. So does that make sense? Like a county in this country would have how many teams? One?
Yeah.
It's, you know, a couple. So it's kind of like, no, that's what it's like. So, you know, geographically and logistically, mums and dads want to drive kids. Like I hear about kids driving 2 hours each way to training and stuff like that. Oh my God. I'm dreading that when my boy starts playing at a higher level. Like we've just picked a team for him to play on and he's playing for the team that's going to be 5 minutes from our house, which is ideal. But I didn't push him into something. I didn't want him to play early. I wanted him to play. You know, he's going to be nine. He's going to be playing on the 9-year-old's team. It's like, I don't know. I totally agree with you guys. It's almost like, it doesn't need to be a chore. They've got to want to go there and they've got to want to love it. And then they've got to really love it. They're going to want to drive an hour each way or 2 hours each way. So, like, Ryan, I know you played club soccer growing up. I'm sure you're driving all around, especially if you lived in DC.
Yeah, we would drive the hour to Richmond, or we would drive the hour and a half to DC, or we would drive the 2 hours to Charlottesville for training. And that was 2 to 3 days a week. And that was hard on my parents, especially. And then getting up for school at 6 a.m. in the morning. Not ideal, but.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I do think one thing that it's my country now because I live here. I've spent all my life in this country that I've spent in the UK, but these facilities are so good though. Like the facilities in this country are so good. So, you know, we were so fortunate with that. So you're playing on better pitches and you've got, you know, the support and the infrastructure and the finances. So it will come good. It's just going to take time. So just be patient. Be patient, America.
Do you see anything with like the youth life they can work on a little bit better in that retrospect, or anything they can improve on for them currently?
It's difficult for me to say. I'm not in that youth game anymore. I've been in it, and I did it when I was in Wisconsin. I ran the club up there, and I ran the elite team there. And I've got friends who do it. My big thing would just be make sure any kid that wants to play and is good enough to play should be playing. Does that make sense? Like the best lads need to be playing on the best teams. And it shouldn't come down to money. It shouldn't come down to mum and dad not being able to afford it. So that'd be my only thing. But I know for example, with the Lions with stuff, I know if you want to go pro or trying to go pro, they put stipulations in there where you have to have free play for your, I think it's your 14s, 16s and 18s, things like that, you know? So the stipulations are there. It's getting there, but it's just going to take time, isn't it? So
now with going through the whole youth and the youth academies in America and going up through club soccer, how is it supposed to be, I guess, an easy avenue for athletes? A lot of athletes come to me now and are trying to get scouted for colleges and are trying to look everywhere else. But they're having the dilemma right now of going through the website of NCSA and paying that money. But a lot of players who can't afford that, you know, what are some advices you would give to those players, you know, trying to look for other avenues?
I'm old school, as you know, right? Like if, you know, write to coach and write him properly would be my advice. I remember you wrote me Willow connected with you because you got a thing. You had some sort of connection with you and Willow, but then you spoke with Willow. This is my old assistant, Patrick. Ryan spoke with him directly, and the direct contact was the thing that we liked. So, you get these emails. Hey, coach, if you're going to send an email to a coach, at least spend 5 minutes to figure out what his first and last name is and then spell it right. And things like that, you know what I mean? And I give it, when we have ID camps and stuff all the time. Our ID camps, we do them different. We do it really small because we want to try and get the kids we really want. But like, so let's say you're going and doing a camp at your one. At least know what our record was in the year prior. And you know what I mean? Know that, we just graduated a goalkeeper. So Ryan just graduated. Are you looking to add another goalkeeper for next year? Those sorts of things, you know? And it's kind of one of those ways you've got to do your homework. And I think it's just the old school due diligence piece. And maybe that's just me. You've probably got other coaches, like the younger coaches are probably all about social media, Instagram and all that kind of crap. I'm more about like, let's put a face to a name and let's talk and, you know, come on campus, speak to us in person. I remember your recruiting trip, right? I remember speaking with you and your dad, and obviously I then met you when I came in. I remember visiting you. I talked about this a few weeks ago. Came and watched you play. I don't remember the high school name, but it was in Fredericksburg. And it had a running track around it. It was a big, massive stand on the side. You were in goal. Your kicking was unbelievable that day. You were like freaking crushing the ball and you played really well. And then we went out. Like Longhorn or Outback or something. Yeah. But that's, for me, that's what I remember those things. So that's what is important to me. So it's like, differentiate yourself from the crowd. I think you must have sent me your schedule and said, hey, coach, I've got this game going on. I'd love to come see me play. So for me, that's what players have got to do. Don't just, those NSA people and all that, I'm not trying to knock them. Obviously, they're trying to make a job and a livelihood, but you can do that. You can email a coach, figure out what schools you really want to go to. I just think there's so much old school value stuff. You know, if you've gone on a, you've gone on a visit, shoot the coach an email. Thanks, coach, for coming to, or you know, the coach came and watched you play. Coach, thanks for watching me play. You know, I've got him here. You'll see. I've got note cards here. I'm writing people who came to our, we always have an awards banquet, Ryan, obviously fought of those for years. I'm still writing notes to people saying thanks for coming to our awards banquet. I think that sort of stuff goes a long way. It's almost like the old school values are separating the people now from, because everyone can text, everybody can email, everybody can Instagram. How can you separate yourself? And you might be able to separate yourself a different way, but I think you can separate yourself without having to spend loads and loads of money. I also think a good way to separate yourself is have people call on your behalf. So I know, right, if you call me and say, look, hey, I've got a kid and he's a good player, but more so, Walls, he's a good person and he'd be the type of guy you'd want in your program. He's got the right integrity and values and blah, 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 those sorts of things. So for us, we go up a lot of recommendation stuff. And I don't remember, I've gone back to you again. We're recruiting on you and I end up golfing with Ron Hicks.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that one? So I went, guy who golfed with Ryan's granddad was an alumni of Chewan and he lived up in the Frogsmith. So I called him. I said, do you know his family? He said, yeah, yeah, I know family really well. Good family, blah, blah, blah. And he'd golfed with your granddad, didn't he? So there's one of those because we want to make sure we get the right people.
Oh, yeah. They worked together for 20 plus years. He was, Ron Hicks was the lawyer in Fredericksburg and my grandpa was the police captain of Fredericksburg. So them two words very closely.
Yeah. So it's small world stuff. But I think people can use those resources and rather than just, you know, every kid's not got, I don't know how much it costs to do NSA or whatever it is, or NCSA. What is it? $1,000, something like that, maybe? Yeah. So I think there's the old school ways of just reaching out to people. And does that take a bit of work? Does that take a bit of time and effort? Yeah, of course it does. And what these kids have got to realize is you're going to get knocked back a lot of times. So, you know what I mean? So, I'd love to work for Man United, but it don't mean I'm going to get a job, does it? So, it's like people have got to be realistic as well. And actually, based off Man United right now, I've got a chance, Ben.
I think one of the things I took away from the ID camps that I never forgot was the biggest things was that how you and the other coaches, because at some of the ID camps, it wasn't just you guys. So I think at my ID camp, I went to a Chowon, the Mount Olive coach was there. The assistant coach may have been there as well. And then when Mount Olive had theirs, they had about 10 other schools. And then Snake was also there, the goalkeeper coach for Chowon at the time. And just listening to how all the college coaches would speak to the players about how, you know, even if we don't pick you up and you're still wanting to go play college soccer, we'll try and help you find the right fit for you. Even though our program may not be the right fit for you, we'll help you find the right fit. And I feel like that encouraged a lot of the players to actually step up and want to speak out and want more for themselves and not just be shy and, you know, regret not speaking up later.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. You've got to think, giving scholarships, you've got, 400 programs in the country that give scholarships, Division 1 and Division 2. You know, and then there's Division 3, and you've got some very, very good Division 3. So let's say there's 200. You've got 600 programs. If each program's got, two or three coaches, it's not that big a network of people across the country this big. Everyone's got contacts, and everybody knows each other. So it's one of those where the recommendation piece and coach to coach, that works. And it could be a year where we don't need a goalkeeper, but our friends somewhere else might need a keeper or a striker or a winger or whatever. So yeah, I think it's one of those where just do the right things by people and people definitely help. And that's a great point you made there. I do remember that because, we used to send out Snake and our younger assistants, we'd send them off on the road and we'd do research as well. We'd watch guys, a lot of stuff we do. And I've kind of stolen this from a friend of mine called Andy Livingston, he was chief scout for Preston North End. He's now in Norwich. a lot of scouting that the pro teams do in the UK doesn't even evolve around the what players want to play it. I'm talking about these guys scouting elite level players. So his advice to me is like, don't watch them. Watch the game, of course. Watch what they do in warm up. Watch what they do when they're subbed on. Watch what they do when they're supposed to be warming up and they're on the sidelines. Watch what they do when they're subbed off. Watch what that player does where his team scores a goal and goes up. Watch what that player does when his team concedes a goal. Watch what that player does when, you know, I'm playing centre back and I have a stinker and I kick the ball over your head, Ryan, and I score an own goal. How's Ryan react towards me? So a lot of the period right now that we do, I'm not really looking at, like, I think everybody, my mum can tell me, she could probably say to me, look, hey, Messi's quite good, isn't he, Chris? You know what I mean? I think we can all tell Messi's pretty good, but we also want to see what people are like as characters. Because good players are going to help you win, but great characters are going to help your program be successful on and off the field. And you can probably remember, right, we had some great characters over the years, and we had some that weren't great as well. The ones that weren't great didn't last very long. You know, going to make mistakes with people, but the good ones stick around. So I think it's interesting. That's how the evolution of recruiting's gone. They're not even looking at some of the stuff they do on the field. It's how they act towards their teammates. I saw one the other day. Who was it? Somebody came off. It was Darwin Núñez came off for Liverpool, and he didn't high five. What's his name coming on? Didn't high five the Portuguese lad coming on. And supposedly, I read some stuff after that, how Klopp's hammered him behind the scenes because he's come off the field. And is it Jota? Yeah, Jota's come on. He didn't even high five. Like, what kind of guy is that? That doesn't high five his teammate who's going on the field. Yeah, you're pissed off and you don't want to be stuck. Come on, dude. So that's kind of a lot of stuff we do now. That's obviously off tangent, but anyway.
That's a great point. That was kind of a question I had, was more so, what do you look for in your recruitment to Lionsbridge and players that you look to retain? You obviously just went over that, but how do you retain these players? Because you send quite a few on to higher ranked leagues across the US and Europe. So what is that process, or I guess more so some of the difficulties you face in keeping these guys with you? Or is this something where they know if you can develop them to a point and get them to move on, that's kind of what we're all working for?
Yeah, I think we're both, in the last 4 or 5 years, we've had 4 or 5 guys go from Chihuahua who've gone on and played. And then, yeah, our numbers for lives, which is great in terms of our developing guys to the next level. My big thing is those guys is a similar sort of thing to come in and do well for us. We'll make sure your training environment's an environment. If when we do get your trials places, you'll be ready for that environment. It's going to be a tough environment. You're going to work hard. You're going to be challenged about what you talk about, right? Those sorts of things. It's going to be, it's a business environment. It's one of those things where you've got to get people bought into your process. Because if they're not bought into your process and they're not bought into what you're trying to do, then they can be the best players in the world. But, even like with the summer leagues, for example, I think last year, why did we have such a good run in the season to what, late on in the season? It's because we kept most of our players. We had a 16, 17, 18 player core of guys that was with us all the way through the season. A lot of teams there, some of their best players might have had to report back for college camps and stuff like that, blah, blah, blah. But if somebody's having a great experience, they're probably going to fight their college coach a little bit further and harder to say, hey, coach, look, we're in the quarterfinals. If we keep winning, can I stay? And I think it's about, enjoying the environment and enjoying the fact that it's okay to want to work hard and push yourself and challenge yourself. But also enjoy being around your friends as well. Like, it's not all serious. It doesn't need to all be crazy serious. And I don't think you need to have the best players either. I think you need to have the best group of people. I do believe in that. And I think there's college programs and professional teams all over the years that have proven that. You know, you look at, why did Stanford win 3 national championships in a row? They had some top players, but their culture, men's soccer-wise, Jeremy, a good friend of mine, the culture was spot on there. That's why they won 3 national championships. Yeah, they had a bunch of guys that went MLS and this and the other. But they had some guys who were just okay soccer players, but were great people. So I think it's about the people you recruit. And if you recruit good people, they want to be around good people and they enjoy that environment. Does that make sense? It's kind of like, it's almost like, I don't think the right word, but good people want to be around good people again. So it's almost like, and then those guys and maybe aren't good people will phase their way out. So you'll laugh about this one. People said to me, what were you doing last season in terms of training, getting ready for the national final, this and the other? We had one training session the week before the national final, before the semi-finals. The guys were absolutely exhausted. They played all these games. They went to a swimming pool one day. They came over to my community. We went to a swimming pool. The other day we went out, we went and played golf. Then we gave them a day off. Then we trained. And then we played in the national semi-finals. It's like, at that stage of the season, if you don't know what you're doing by the national semifinals, you've won a final. So I haven't done my job, have I?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? That tactically, stuff like that. So at that stage of the season, it's like, these guys just need to relax and enjoy being around each other. So, you know, it's, we did. So one of you guys, this swimming pool, and we played golf one day. So I was like, it's ridiculous. It was okay. It worked to an extent. So,
I think you're selling yourself on being the proper head coach here. Golf, swimming pools, a little relaxation.
Well, that's the thing. Hey, people like that stuff, though, don't they? But I'll be honest, we have to try in with the USL lads. It's a difficult, and I'm saying about these things and we're smiling about it. But what I can't do is I can't send our guys back to their college coaches exhausted because they're making a lot more money scholarship-wise, and we're obviously not paying anybody. They're making a lot more scholarship money for their college programs and we're giving them nothing. You know what I mean? We're just giving them the honor to play for us in the summer. So all I'm making sure they do is they're going back ready to go and rare to go and full of confidence and sharpness. So it's one of those where our training schedule, we might ramp it up early in the season and then towards the end of the year, we're going to taper off because obviously these guys have got really, really big seasons coming up. And for me, that's great when I see them go back and do really, really well. Because obviously that's exciting for me, and it's a great, you know, great for me to see these guys have great seasons, which is obviously a lot of fun.
I would say touched on that because obviously you recruit guys to Lions Bridge, you have a lot of turnover. Is there anyone particular that you have coming in this year that we're kind of should keep an eye out on? Maybe a little highlight, a little excitement to build around.
We've got three guys from Kentucky who are coming. Isaiah Chisholm's coming, and a couple of his buddies are coming, and they're going to be good players for us. Bill Gonzalez is one of them. We've got a good group coming in. We've got two guys from Davidson coming in, Dennis and Vincent, who are going to be good players. I think we've got fourteen or fifteen guys coming back. They played in the national finals. So for me, that's pretty exciting. I think there's two or three guys that aren't back. Goalkeeping-wise, we've got an unbelievable staff. Goalkeeping-wise, obviously we're arriving a keeper. But we've got our starter from last year, Tyler, who was the starter at FIU. I thought he'd have got, I'll be totally honest. Then we've got Cole McNally, who was with the U18 national team, played at Wake Forest. He's now a graduate student at William & Mary. And then we've got VCU, Virginia Commonwealth, starting goalkeeper coming to play as well. Big John. So we've got three goalkeepers. I'm just like, I wish I could play all three. So I'll have to rotate and manage that. But no, yes, exciting time. It's really, really cool. It's a lot easier to recruit when you've just been to a national final than it was when I was telling lads on a team that never played a game 7 years ago. Never played a game, never had a crowd, never done anything. It was really kind of that was an interesting one for sure. 7 years ago, I remember being terrified speaking to the administrators. I was calling them the week prior to our first game. How many people do you think we're going to get? Will there be? Do you think there'll be 200 in the game? Will there be 300? How many will there be? I think the first ever game we had about 2,000 people. I was like, this thing's going to work. This thing is going to work. And it's been brilliant. Lionsbridge has been brilliant. It's also been a great, I know we talked about, we've kind of I don't want to take your question away, but it's been a great relationship between Shawan and Lions Bridge as well. We've played games against each other in the spring. So prepping like eyes for the upcoming season and obviously Shawan games in the spring. I remember a penalty shootout with a goalkeeper playing. Didn't go the way the Shawan Hawks wanted that day, but it was a great game. We played at York High School, right? You remember? Wow. I bet it was 1,500 people there for a spring game.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the biggest spring attendance event.
That was definitely biggest spring game I've ever played in, like with so many people there. It was, everyone was everywhere. Chick-fil-A was there. I think everyone was screaming about Chick-fil-A because there was moon bounces around too. It was just, all the kids were loving it.
Yeah, when we score ahead, people get free Chick-fil-A, but no, it's pretty cool. So yeah, there's been a lot of really good kind of things where we've worked together. And look, I think he's helped my Shawan recruiter for sure, because obviously we're working one of the top USL2 programs. But in the same respect, because I'm working with one of the top USL2 programs, it helped my Shawan guys, because I'm now able to probably recommend them to top programs as well, because I know those coaches who we're playing against, which is obviously really beneficial too.
Now, to kind of talk about the, Lions Bridge and Shawan together, what is, I know there's some stipulation where you're not allowed to be coached by your college coach during the summer. So like you can't have your current Shawan players at Lions Bridge, correct? So like, you have to wait for them to graduate.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. Yeah. So obviously it'd be one of those where if you did it, you'd probably have all your players on the team and you'd be getting to coach them another 20 games in the summer, which would be great, but obviously it doesn't work. The max you can send is 5 to per team. So I will send 5 to Appalachian FC, which is up in Boone, North Carolina, obviously real close to Lee Vanderbilt. One of my former players, Dale Parker, he's the head coach at Lander University, Division 2 in South Carolina. He was my captain at Leeds McRae when we went to the national final. He's the head coach there. So every year he takes 5 of my guys there. We've had some of his guys over the years. So there's kind of relationships you have with people and you get players. But yeah, like last couple of years, Luke Stats, who was your assistant coach for a while, played for us. Ryan Stats, who was an ex-pro, played professionally in the Netherlands. Really good player. And then Josh Baker had a pro career, was with us for 2 years at Chuana, moved on to High Point. Sam Hall, who was an All-American, played in the last 16 of the country for us. They're Shawan, and then Harry Lovett, who's a 2-time All-American. So, but yeah, we've got those guys all kind of coming through. And then Fernando Zuniga, our women's coach, has coached for us as well for the last, since day one. And then Lee Wattam, our women's assistant, played for us for a couple of years as well. So he has a ton of ties, and it's pretty cool that we can kind of work together. And it's now at a stage where the Lions Bridge Supporters Club, they've got their own supporters club called Defenders of the Bridge. They now come out and support Shawan. And they've came, they had a crowd of them coming to our conference final last year and come out and watch some of our spring games. So it's pretty cool how the connections all come together, you know? And they just love football, which is awesome, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. It's definitely amazing to bring that whole community together. And then especially bridging from Lions Bridge fans, having that 2,000 to 3,000 plus fans and trying to draw them over to Shawan to help support us in that way too. That's amazing. And talk about your players coming back. One player I wanted to give a little shout out because you didn't mention him. Adam Kirkwood is making a return. You want to speak about Adam?
Yeah, I love Kirky. I absolutely love Kirky. Obviously, he's been the women's graduate assistant at Citadel for the last few years, obviously down there with you guys in Charleston. I think he's playing your men's league team.
Yeah, he got me on his men's league team now.
Stuff together, right? Yeah, no, he's a great guy. Adam was very unfortunate. He got sent off in a national final, one of the most dubious sending offs I've ever seen. I think if the final was played on the East Coast, he would have been playing the whole game. But really good player, really good human being, just a mature, he's a college coach. So it's nice when you have a couple of college coaches on the field. So for me, there's a calmness and a sensibleness, and, he's made big plays at big times and really, really good player and a really good person, very popular and liked, and massive leadership potential obviously with him there. you know, if we didn't have captain in Cedric Place in Sam Hall, our former Chouan player, he was a captain and a leader, just didn't wear an armband. But yeah, good player for sure. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's exactly how I felt, you know, getting to know him and now coaching alongside with him. He's definitely one of those people where I love playing on the field with him. He reminds me so much of Toby and just the passion, the fight, and then the calmness too of being able to chirp at people and have that funny banterness with them and be calm but serious at the same time. It's a good quality to have.
Yeah. I think him and Toby actually played together at South Carolina Bantams this summer when Toby played there. So yeah, I know they did. They're still really good friends. But I keep talking about this Toby, like Toby Sims played for us at Chouan. He'll go into the Hall of Fame at Chouan. He was a pro at Pittsburgh Riverhounds for a year and then went home, and he's been playing pro for Harrogate Town in the UK in League Two for the last couple of years. He obviously played with Ryan at Chouan. Okay. Quite international, weren't we? So
with how the international to the Americans went, and then the mix that we had at the senior year of just everybody was amazing.
Yeah. So I think that's, I think that's one of my gripes about college soccer. Look, I'm an international, so it's kind of, I'm a bit like, the pot calling the kettle black, but like, I think there's too many internationals in America, in college soccer. I think there needs to be some stipulations on stuff. And I see teams, it's almost everybody's international. I don't see how that is helping the American game grow.
Speaking of that, so this leads me into my next question. There's a club, I believe it's Atletico Bilbao in Spain, where they're only allowed to pool their players for their top tier team from that region of Spain. And it's about 2 to 3 counties in Spain where they can pool from. Do you think the NCAA or the league should implement some sort of geographical region pool to help these colleges pool from their said areas?
I don't think logistically, with the way this country is that we live in right now. So I don't think, I don't think you'd be, I think just the lawmakers wouldn't allow that to happen. But I do like the idea of stipulations. Like they have it in USL2, you're only allowed, I think, 12 internationals on the roster each day, which is a lot, but there'd be some teams who everybody would be international. So that's a positive. Yeah. Does that make sense? Like we never had a problem with a ton of good American guys. But I think in college soccer, I think it'd be one of those where I think if they had some stipulation on the amount of domestic guys that we involved, I think that would help the game grow in this country for sure. But look, he's one of those as well. I've found in the last couple of years, there's been more international guys going Division One. And a lot more Division One programs are recruiting international guys rather than domestic guys. So we've flipped it, and we've recruited even more domestic guys. So it's kind of like, just figure out which way it works. When I first started Leeds McRae, it was one of those where the internationals were quite untouched, if that makes sense. So that was the route I went there. So it's always going to evolve and figure out, you're just going to figure out which way you're going to skin the cat, if that makes sense.
Are you saying you're kind of leading the charge and the change?
No, I'm not leading the charge. And I don't skin cats either, if anybody was. That's just Kurt Zuma who kicks it, right?
Right.
Well, so if you think the lawmakers, which we can all agree with, that's not going to really change anytime soon, dealing with when it comes to the MLS and how, they try to pull some stuff going into the US Open this year, and now they only have 8 teams going in.
Yeah.
That kind of diminished the USL a little bit and how they felt left out and betrayed a little bit by the MLS by thinking, you guys are not that much better than us. You guys are realistically only in your own league because you have billionaires who own you and are willing to put up the money for it. Do you think that there should or there will come a time where promotion and relegation is a possibility in America when it comes to the professional leagues?
I hope so. I just don't know if geographically, because of the size of this country, as I said before, it's a continent. I don't know if geographically that will ever be possible. And if I put myself in their shoes, if I'm the owner of, I don't know, Atlanta United, I've invested all this money into it. I've done this. Why do I then want to run the risk of dropping down into a lower league? So I think it's, I can see it both ways. I just don't think it will happen for a long, long time, but I do think it would be a good thing. I think the bigger thing that needs to happen is every town needs to have a team. And I think then that each state needs to have a team. I think that's how you make it happen. So Charleston have got Charleston Battery. But what's a small town outside of Charleston? Give me an example. Columbia. And then, you know, obviously you've got, in, what's the name? Greenwood, where Lander is, should have a team. And then every little town, Spartanburg, South Carolina, should have a team. Greenville's got a team. Do you know what I mean? That's how it works. Then if you start getting, everyone gets a team and then they then play a state league, then you can, I think, potentially be that. It could then filter up. And that's, in, I think, that would be, for me, that's how it's worked all around the world elsewhere. But as the game grows, it'll probably happen. Because I think then, logistically, your travel would be possibly better. But, you know, I've gone to the continent a lot as a kid in Europe. Every little town in France, every town. And it's municipally owned. So it's, you know, kind of, I guess, government or local government funded. They all have a football pitch. They all have a swimming pool. They all have tennis courts, which are immaculate. They all have, you know, I mean, all these facilities are immaculate. That's what I think you need. Because if you've got those facilities for all sports, then you'd have success. So that's probably why France has won more World Cups in the last 15, 20 years than anybody has, you know? So, but yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? It's such a big country and we've got so many other things to compete with as well, not just sports. So.
Yeah, that makes just in relation to facilities and really just even getting the people behind it to support it as well, which we obviously in this country see a huge support for NFL and youth camps and that development. So I think it's a great point.
It's tricky, isn't it? I think by then you like, you see these, what was it like USPSL and USPL and all leagues. It's like, it's, I think some of it again goes down to, these leagues have wanted to make money as well off it. So it's kind of like, it should, I don't think it should be about that. It should be about growing the game. If it's about growing the game, then the leagues that make money off it, the money should be reinvested back into coaching and the kids and all of that kind of stuff, you know? So, but look, trust me when I say this, the FA get absolutely hammered in England because the Premier League teams are getting, you know, you've got these lower league teams going out of business and you've got Premier League team. So I just because football's huge in the UK and you know, NBC's got all this, so I don't think they've got it right either. It's, yeah, there's always going to be problems, isn't there?
That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't realize that was a big thing over with the FA right now with the Prem and everything. Because, you know, right now we're just focusing on like the little things like the MLS and stuff. And when we focus on the Prem, we just think, oh my gosh, it's the Prem. That's the top league where we're all watching. And then you have, like me, like I watched Wolves when we were in the second or in the League Two in England. You know, that's when I started liking them. And I can kind of see like where those, there's academies do struggle when they want to go, when all these players want to go play for the top clubs or they get bought up real quickly at, you know, because a lot of them do move over when they're like 16 or so, right?
Yeah. And it's, it comes out to money and stuff like that. I think like, we had a guy played for his last summer called Matty Cornish. Played for Palm Beach Atlantic, beat us when we were in the Sweet 16, came and played for me for Lionsbridge last year, did great, went home and played for, we had him on trial, Richmond Kickers looked at him, some other teams looked. He went and played for a team called Mask in the UK. I think they were in the fifth tier or something like that. The team folded halfway through the season. They couldn't play. We're talking about the fifth tier or the sixth tier of English football. They just folded because they couldn't afford to pay people anymore. He ended up transferring on to Darlington. Darlington were a football league team 10 years ago. They had to drop down from like four tiers, five tiers, because they folded financially. Now he's playing for them, doing really well. But now there's another kid who we're recruiting who can't remember the team, which he was playing for, but that team folded. So the team he was playing for folded. So you've got multi-million dollars with the Premier League and you've got teams five tiers lower folded because they can't afford to play the players or they can't afford to pay their facilities and stuff like that. So that's where it's going to, there's got to be some sort of balance, right, with the funding. So I guess it goes the same with the MLS as well, though, doesn't it?
Do you think that's what is really stopping them from trying to do a lot of these teams popping up in areas to potentially stop them from just popping up for the season or two and then potentially just folding due to not being able to simply pay their players or the facilities and stuff?
Yeah, I think some of it's that. Like, I think American soccer's come a long, long way. But I remember, like I said to you guys, I played USL. It was 2003, something like that. And Reading Raid were a professional team. Then just one day overnight, they said, okay, we're not a professional team. And I think that happened all the time. Like Charleston Battery, the Richmond Kickers are like, they are like the outliers, aren't they? That have been around, how many years has Battery been around for? 20 years now, something like that? More than that.
1993.
Yeah. Richmond are one of the longest, or maybe the third team in the country, which is great. And that's how it should be. But I can think of like Syracuse had a pro team folded and disbanded. I can think of other, so I think some other place. Greenville, South Carolina had a pro team years ago and they disbanded. Greensboro, North Carolina had the Carolina Dynamo folded and disbanded. Wilmington Hammerheads had a pro team. They were good. Folded and disbanded. There was a lad who played for them, Glenn something. He ended up playing for Crystal Palace. Played for Crystal Palace in the Premier League. Played for Wilmington Hammerheads. And they ended up folded. No, it's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Glenn Murray. Do you remember Glenn Murray or not? Played for Brighton. Played for the Wilmington Hammerheads. And then 2 years later, they folded and have a professional football team anymore. It's like, how ridiculous is that?
I remember playing for that summer. I played for Charlottesville Alliance. We had Daryl Dyke, who he now plays for West Brom in the Prem, and Henry Kessler, who's now the center back for New England Revolution in the MLS. And that Charlottesville Alliance no longer exists anymore.
They have just started up, and they're now like Charlottesville FC. They've actually joined the league with Lions. But again, folding, it's kind of like, it's got to be, it shouldn't be like that, should it, you know? We shouldn't be. It's great that the Battery, and it's great that Richmond have lasted so long, but that shouldn't be. We shouldn't be lauding them for lasting so long. Everybody should be, shouldn't they? Does that make sense? So, I'm not undermining what they're doing. I think it's brilliant. It's brilliant. So I think what you guys do is great. You obviously got great support bases. So, but I think that, for example, Lions were just shown. You find the right market, it's become Lions. Business isn't just about a soccer; it's about a community. And if you find the right community and the community gets behind it, I'm sure it's the same at Charleston. I know Richmond's race. It becomes a community event and everybody wants to be there and you don't want to miss out because of what's going on. So, which is really cool, isn't it?
That's the amazing part too, is that is the focal point of town. That's the talk of the town. That's what everyone's talking about. That's where everyone's going to. It's the center point. And to make it into a big show and have, you know, vendors there and, you know, everyone's families being able to attend it and to enjoy a game is a good time to have, and just amazing atmosphere to have created for your community as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think sports are really, really special, aren't they? They do bring people together. I say this about soccer all the time. People say whatever they like about soccer. They don't discriminate. You can be black, white, pink, green, blue, you know, male, female, you can identify as whatever you want to identify as. You can come from Mars. When it's all said and done, you can play football, can't you? And that's what's pretty cool about football, soccer, whatever you want to call it. And it's called different things all around the world. But it doesn't matter. Big guys, little guys, fat guys, thin guys. You know what I mean? The best player in the world is frigging tiny, isn't he? You know what I mean? So, and then you've got giants who play as well. So how cool is that? So, it's a pretty neat thing, isn't it?
Oh, most certainly. To go into Lionsbridge this season, your guys' season's right around the corner, starting on May 11th against Virginia Beach FC. So with that game starting off your season, do you have any additions made to the stadium or like any kits that you guys are excited about for this upcoming season?
I think the jerseys have already been designed. So they do a pretty cool thing. They designed the jerseys with the, they put three or four jerseys out there, they plugged it, and they let the fans vote on the jerseys. So which jersey, yeah, which is pretty neat. And the jerseys, I don't know if they do something like this at Charleston as well, but the jerseys are your season ticket. So this year, it's obviously 24. We won't have a number 24 this year. Last year, we didn't have a number 23, which obviously everyone was upset about because of Jordans. But one of those where every year, that's your season ticket. So you can buy a season ticket and get a wristband, or you can buy the jersey and that is your jersey and you wear it for home games.
That's an interesting concept. I love that. So your jersey is your ticket.
Pretty cool. Your jersey is your ticket. So they vote in it. And then they also vote on the away jerseys as well. So, and then at the end of the season, they do think about the auction of jerseys off. And, you know, obviously you've got your favorite players and all that stuff and people are clambering over them. It's strange. Nobody's trying to bid in on my my coaching polo. It's whatever, you know. Bit disappointed. I'm going to have to put it out. But no, that's a pretty cool cause. In fairness, our owners and do a fantastic job. Mike Vest, he's really clued in. And we're really involved in the community and do a lot of things with the community, which is pretty cool, you know. We have, I think I've mentioned to you, if any of our players score a header in the game, everybody gets a free Chick-fil-A sandwich after the game. Pretty awesome.
That's awesome. So if anyone scores a header for Lions Bridge FC at home, everyone in the stadium gets a free Chick-fil-A sandwich. I want to see some flying headers this season. I want to see some Robin Van Persies on that field coming soon.
Exactly, yeah. So fortunately, we have a very small field, very narrow, and we have generally have someone with a long throw. Obviously, Harry Lover, new signing, long throw. We had another kid last year, Coleman Jennings, long throw. He's just signed for UAB. And then Harry Rowe had a long throw as well. So narrow pitch, long throw, good on set pieces. Yeah, make people happy. So they sing, "We want chicken, we want chicken," which is, yeah.
That's so
pretty cool.
Love that. Well, Coach, really appreciate your time with us. Look forward to the season. I'm going to be cheering for you. Let's get some chicken on this end. I don't think we could do it, but we'll have to hold each other accountable, Ryan.
Yes, maybe we would.
Maybe do a little back and forth on
Yeah.
But I appreciate having you on. Like, really awesome picking your brain and getting your thoughts on numerous things. Something that just, I think any soccer fan can tune in and take something from any age group. So really appreciate it. And thank you for that.
Right. You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me. And thanks for doing this. Thanks for doing what you're doing. You know, this is, like you said, hopefully if the conversations we have help one young soccer player out there and his process in, you know, trying to find a college or trying to find a team, then that's great. But no, it's pretty cool. Obviously, great to see Ryan. All right. Well, I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much for having me. Okay. Have a great evening. We are the battery. We are the holy city, home of the battery.